DGS on KMOX. Time to talk to our pal Ricky Horton. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Good, man. So, if I'm not mistaken, you just came out of the manager's meeting. Anything to report there? Anything of note?
No, other than the manager had a good way of describing the guy that we're going to face today. He's like a closer that pitches for six innings.
Wow. That's pretty good.
I think that's about what it's going to be. But, we're all looking forward to watching Paul Skeens pitch. And, he's one of the phenoms of baseball right now. And, you always want to go up against the best to just see how good you are.
I remember being introduced to him last year in the College World Series. Did you get into the College World Series, Rick?
No. When Virginia's in, I pay attention. Like this year. I mean, I pay more attention, let's put it that way. And I do enjoy watching the World Series. A lot of times it's hard to actually catch extra games with the schedule as it is.
I mean, it's not going too far to say he is possibly health-dependent, once-in-a-generational talent, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's very possible. And, again, the whole thing is, building that consistency and being that guy and just continuing to do it and staying away from injuries. There's so many other things. It's interesting. There's a conversation about both of their young pitchers is how many innings are you going to let those guys go? He and Jones as a young players. And that's an interesting thing to contemplate as you think about the tightness of the Central Division right now. I'm still hoping for a five-way tie at some point during the year. I'm still looking forward to that maybe happening. Milwaukee's going to have to go into a bit of a tailspin to make that happen.
Rick, I'm just kind of curious about that following up on that innings thing with a guy like Skeens, because he's basically going five and out. They've got him on a pretty strict limit there, five innings, and he's done. It's not really innings. I'm sure it's more pitches than innings.
Yeah.
But, this was a guy that a year ago in college was throwing seven, eight, nine innings almost every time out, and certainly in every meaningful game, probably throwing 120, 125 pitches. Have we seen any evidence that pitch counts and limiting guys is preventing injuries? Because I can't find it.
Well, I can't find it either, but I think the doctors believe that it's true, and I think that's where it kind of emanated, the whole idea of we believe that we've had so many injuries when guys get to a certain point of pitches per game, let's say, or pitches per inning, even. I think they've studied it it's, I'm not going to say it's an exact science, but I think they're trying to minimize the risk when a guy gets overly tired. And of course, you've got so many guys, as you guys know, that are max effort pitchers. They throw so hard, and they put so much spin on the baseball that, they're bound to get injured at some point. And, it is a different season, clearly, baseball season from a college season. You're playing more than twice as many games. It is a different animal.
Yeah, they throw once every 7 days. Right.
Can I ask you guys? Is there any suggestion that the major leagues frown upon the college ranks kind of taking advantage of the pitchers like that and having them go nine innings, or is it just apples and oranges?
Well, I don't know that they have a say in it, frankly. I mean, I think when you draft a guy, then he becomes your property. Then you kind of have the desire to manage him the way you want to do it and with your doctors and your system, et cetera. But before that, it is not in your control. I mean, I think would baseball prefer to have guys not come out of college injured or even out of high school injured, for that matter, yes. But, I think it's just where we are. College teams want to win and high school teams want to win, and it's not always in the best interest of the player.
No, it's been that way for a long time,
it
too.
Has.
I mean, the college thing's a little more understandable because, as we mentioned, Rick, they only pitch once every seventh day. So Skeens would pitch every Friday. That was his year. But those coaches are getting hired and fired based on wins and losses. I mean, there's some job security there. At the amateur levels, high school and below, they're not firing high school coaches typically because of their records.
Right.
And I'm a little, you hear this story. Do you remember the story, Rick, of Kerry Wood?
Yeah.
Where in the playoffs, one day he threw a complete game, and then the second game, it was either the same day or the next day, he relieved and he threw like two, three innings after throwing 120, 130 pitches in seven innings. Like, it's that stuff. And then what I see every week, Rick, is kids, even as young as 14, throwing 90 to 100 pitches in a game, and then they don't come out of the game. They go to shortstop.
Yeah, well, that's the
Or they play catcher the next game, and it's just like, okay, that's where injuries are coming from.
So I thank my high school coach. I mean, I would sometimes relieve in between starts. I'd pitch an inning or so if it warranted that, but I was never allowed to make a throw during infield practice. I played first base, and he would bring a guy out, and I would flip it. Even during infield practice, back in the days taking infield,
great.
I would flip him the ball with my glove, and he would throw it to the catcher when we were throwing around the infield. He was he was pretty forward thinking on that.
Yeah.
That was what was that 80 years ago. So
his name was Abner. So, Rick, obviously, with the Pirates coming in every series, the what you want to do is you want to win the series and sweep if you can. But what are you looking for from the Pirates? What are you looking to see the team develop as we continue to try to get above 500?
Well, you know, the Pirate team has got a pretty good lineup, so you're going to have to control them, and Miles Michaelis is going to have to continue to pitch the way he has his last three or four starts. He's definitely on an uptick, and you know, he'll have to be sharp again. He's going to work with Pajes today to try to control the running game, and that's a thing you got to do when you play the Pirates and certain teams. You have to make sure they're not, you know, every single's not a double, and so that's one of the things that's going on. But honestly, it's the same old story. Unfortunately, you go back to the idea of when the offense does well, the Cardinals are going to win. They need to get the 5, 6, 7 runs, and you don't have to get them all against the starter. Mm-hmm. You can get them against the bullpen. Now, if you get into their bullpen and you're losing, that's not a good thing either. They've got some firepower, 7, 8, 9, just as the Cardinals do.
Yeah, they definitely do. And you know, on the Cardinals pitching side, Rick, you mentioned Michaelis, who has been quite a bit better here these last few. I've been a little surprised, though, at how early Lynn and Sonny Gray are coming out of games. It seems like the fifth inning is tough for both of them right now.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, you get into – well, here's one of the reasons why they are coming out, because the Cardinals, as and we've talked about this, 71% of their games have been decided by 3 runs or less.
Yeah.
So you're already kind of in panic mode when you get to the sixth inning. It'd be nice – I mean, so Pallante – and Ollie did share this with us today. Pallante would – I mean, if it was 8-0, Pallante probably would have stayed out there another inning. And if there wasn't an off day the next day, because he had guys ready to pitch, Libertor pitched in that final game against Colorado. Good thing the Cardinals won that to at least split the series. But the point is, I think that's happened with – you know, a couple of different guys, that there's just not much of a margin for error. You cannot kind of leave the guy out there when you've got maybe a better option short term because the game's so close.
Rach, would you like to ask the question you asked me today of a professional athlete?
Oh, I would love that. Rick, first of all, it's an honor to get to talk to you.
That was great.
I was wondering, what advice would you give to people who are playing sports maybe for the first time on how to clear their mind when it's time to play? Well, I've just never been that athletic of a person. I'm starting to get into tennis. It's a bit more of a struggle than I thought it would be. And my biggest issue is just chatter inside my head and not being able to block out the outside noise.
Yeah, boy, that's such a common thing. That's a great question, too. I mean, that is basically the sports psychologists have been dealing with a lot of professional athletes on that same subject, you know, men and women, all kinds of sports, is how do I get that chatter out of my head? And, you know, practicing it is one thing, but I think not focusing on outcome is where I would start, because a lot of times that chatter is, what if I don't get this serve in? What if I miss this putt? What if and so you're thinking about outcomes, and you'll hear baseball play. Other people will say it too. They'll talk about the process. When you focus on the process, it's like, okay, I'm just going to hit the ball the way I want to hit it. I'm going to putt the ball the way I want to putt it. I'm going to use that stroke that I. And so you get into a routine that is comfortable and it's very physical, so you don't have to think so much about it. And so, I mean, that is a place to start. And, you know, I would add this. Bruce Sutter told me my first year in the big leagues, after losing a game, he was sitting at his locker. He had a smile on his face. He had a bucket of beer in front of him. And I said, well, how do you do that? He goes, well, I've won before and I've lost before and I've lived both times. Yeah, and that was his answer to me. And it's like, wow, that is, you know, it was kind of simple, but it was also profound, too.
You know, it's so fascinating watching the pros. So I have every letter you can have, ADD, ADHD, OCD. And when I was a kid, I had really terrible OCD with, like, the facial grimaces and, you know, nervous tics and things like that. And when I watch Arenado, I see a little bit of that he's very jittery and active. But then what I love is before every play, before the ball is hit, he is dead still. And you see that a lot with guys in their batting stance. They're moving all over the place, but when the pitch is on the way, they're dead still.
So there's two other things that come to mind. One of them is what Jason Isringhausen told Adam Wainwright when he got to be a closer his first year in the big leagues. He said, don't forget to breathe. And breathing can really calm this stuff too. And so that's part of it. But the focus part, that, you know, when you're all over the place thinking about a lot of things, baseball players and other sports, kickers, they have this ability to have a soft focus I see what's going on. I'm taking in the world around me. And then they zone right into a hard focus. And I think that can be practiced and can be improved. And you can't, if you stay in a hard focus all day long at a baseball field, you'll drive yourself and your teammates crazy. Right. So that's something.
Rick, last question here. Wheels and I had to talk about this on yesterday's show. The miking up the players on the broadcast. How do you feel about that as a broadcaster and a player?
I hate it. I mean, I'm not talking as a fan right now. I mean, we had a game several years ago where there was a ball hit to Paul DeJong when he was mic'd up and he didn't catch it. And it's like, okay, this is a guy's work here, and you know, you wouldn't want to mic up a guy in a boardroom at a
that's
business.
Really, I mean, smart.
I would like that. Well, he might not.
Well, you might like it for a bit, and then you might kind of. But I don't. Here's what I would say. I wish they would do it in spring training all the time.
Yeah.
And I wish they would do it during the season. Never. That's my opinion. Or do it during the All-Star game, and that'd be fine. But not during a game that counts.
Yeah. I really like it when they have guys that are not in the game on the bench, like when Waino did it a couple times when he wasn't pitching that day. I love that.
And I'm okay with that too. Yeah. But if you're talking about a guy mic'd up on the field, he is. I mean, we keep talking about how great these guys are at focusing and keeping noise out, and it's like, well, they're not when they're doing that. Yeah. They're just not.
All right, buddy. Have a great call.
Thanks. Appreciate it, guys.
Welcome back, guys. DGS, bottom of the hour. We'll talk to Dave Murray. He's going to be heating up here in the next couple of days. We have the Think Tank, Steve Ellman, and Jeff Smith, two of our favorites on the day that Hunter Biden is convicted of all three felony counts. And Brad Young joins us now to talk about it. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Dave.
So I want to hear your analysis legally and politically, please.
Well, I guess right out of the chute, I need to say this. I don't think right now that there's anything particularly relevant either legally or politically about this. I think there would have been an enormous both legal and political outcry if the jury would have reached a different verdict because the evidence was overwhelming. And secondly, if that sweetheart deal that was talked about last year would have gone forward, that would have been both legal and politically significant because it would have been outrageous. In essence, the settlement deal that he tried to get, in fact, it was literally presented to the judge for approval last year, would have resulted in no jail time. It would have wiped out all the tax charges that he faces in September of this year. And it would have been outrageous from a perspective of nobody gets that deal unless your last name is Biden. But that didn't happen. So when you look at the conviction today, I don't see that it's politically significant. This isn't going to change anyone's vote who wants to vote for or against Biden. I don't think it's legally significant. The jury reached the right verdict. The evidence was overwhelming. The jury took 3 hours to decide it, and it was in a county that Biden carried by 72% of the vote in the last election. So when you put all that in a blender, I think this is what should have happened. And if his name wasn't Biden, I don't think we would be covering this at all.
Brad, this is not a political question. It really is a legal question. I have bought many guns and have filled out this form. I didn't know. I guess I just was never high at the time, so I didn't
That's
take
good.
Note of it. But is this something people get charged with often?
Yes, it is. And it's usually done after the fact. In other words, if you look at those people who have been convicted on this, typically it's people who are drug dealers, people who are convicted of some other crime. And then when the prosecutors want to pile on, as it were, with additional charges, they look back, and if they can prove that Mr. Cocaine Dealer bought a gun and he actually bought it legally, most cocaine dealers don't do that. But if they do, it's a way to add on an additional charge. But it's not an infrequent charge. And in this instance, there was ample evidence, both by testimony, and we had Hunter Biden's literally his own words in his audiobook stating that at this point in time, he was doing cocaine every 20 minutes. And so his own words convicted him, even though he didn't testify.
You think he'll go to real jail? And is he covered by the Secret Service?
Well, he is not covered by Secret Service, and he could actually do real jail time. The maximum is 25 years for these three charges. He's not going to do anything close to that. And if he did, it would be at a country club prison because he doesn't have any prior convictions. There was no evidence that the gun was used for any violent acts. There's no actual victims here. So when you put all that together, I don't think he would do jail time, but if he did, it would be minimal and it would be at a minimum security prison.
And, you know, I like your take that, hey, there's really nothing to see here. This is just a U.S. citizen who made a bad decision and was convicted of it. That, to me, is the story. Is it's been so long since we've had anything like this feel normal. It feels pretty good.
It does. I mean, this is truly the dog bites man story. It's not a big deal. But if the man bites the dog, then it gets the headlines. And in this instance, it's a dog bites man. I don't see anything here that's exciting, although there could have been if it would have went in a different direction. Yeah. But in this instance, it did not.
Very good. All right, Brad. Thanks as always. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Good take.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In that it's basically, it is what it should be, which That's is right. the basics.
That's right.
It's simple, straightforward. This
I appreciate
is what happened.
That. I mean, Brad is far more than a pundit, but I appreciate it when a pundit comes on the show and says, yep, a whole bunch of nothing. Go do something else with your day. 334 DGS. Dave Murray joins us. Hello, Dave.
Hello there.
So, obviously, the weather story is it's going to be heating up, but...
Yes.
It's middle summer.
That's true. It's right. June, yeah. right? Summer right. officially begins on the 20th. So
somehow it snuck up on us, I think.
Come on, it's St. Louis. It's June, July, yeah. August, September.
Yeah.
But it's not, I mean, it's going to be hot. It's going to get hot. But tomorrow is the transition day. 90 degrees for the high, but it's a dry heat. So mm-hmm. it's going to feel like 89, 90 degrees outside. We can deal with that. That's yeah. not a problem. Wednesday night, it's a warm night, 80s during the evening, 69 for the overnight low. Thursday is sunny. I have to call it hot. Low to moderate humidity. It doesn't look like a washcloth type pattern. 95 on Thursday. A weak cool front is going to come by Thursday night. A summer cool front might be a couple of spot storms. The focus for severe weather is going to be northern Missouri and north central Illinois. So to our north, Friday is a touch cooler. Not by much. 92, lots of sunshine. The weekend, Saturday, sunny and 95. Sunday, sunny and 99. The last time we were 100 degrees, August 20th of last summer, we had 4 days of 100 plus 104 was the topper.
Mm. Dave, any indication like after into next week whether we continue this or if we get any kind of break?
I think still in June, we're going to see these ups and downs. We're on the borderline of the heat dome that will be really establishing itself over the Southwest and the Southern Plains and the Northwest flow. So every once in a while, we get a cool front coming by, summer version. But at least it knocks the temperatures back a little bit. But the overall trend is going to be warm to hot for the rest of the summer.
Will, does it make a big difference in the Cardinals games and the coaching and such when it's 99, 100 degrees?
It can. They have to monitor the pitchers and the catchers mostly. I mean, mostly it's just extra.
How bad was catching in southern Florida?
it was rough, man. So, like, you remember old Busch Stadium and the AstroTurf that they had? That's what we had. So the on-field temperatures for us on a normal day game, like on a Sunday day game, the on-field temperature is probably 114 with the turf.
The old Busch Stadium got there were 120, 125 on a couple of games.
So, yeah, it was. I mean, they kept a pretty good eye on me after I passed out a couple times as a freshman.
Yeah.
Wasn't even the heat.
I said, no, I'm not even joking. I did. Yeah, we were running on the track, and I went down twice because just not used to that
Isn't
level
that
of heat.
Isn't that a weird feeling? I only passed out once, but... Dude, yeah, that's a crazy feeling.
It was funny because I always describe it to people because I was the worst guy on the team. So I had to, in my mind, I had to finish near the front or at least in the middle of all of the things we did, like in conditioning and things like that. And freshman, I'm like, all right, I got to make sure that I'm doing this. And we're just doing, I don't know, we're doing 200s or something on the track, 200 meter runs. And I'm running and I'm like, it's starting to get cloudy. Wow, look at that. And I'm like, wait a minute, those aren't clouds. What's next thing I remember, I'm in the training room being put into a bucket of ice.
Wow.
Into an ice tub, I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
A bucket of ice.
Yeah, not a bucket. I'm not that small.
The big bucket.
Yeah, but no, it was a big home field advantage for us because we were used to it, and a lot of the opponents would come down and they'd be like, "What is this?" But you have to change. We would all, I know I did, I changed shirts in the middle of practice some days, or changed shirts in the middle of a game. Yeah.
I remember, I don't know how old I was, Corey League, and I wanted to be the catcher because the catcher was cool.
You have the gear.
Ted Simmons, you get to wear all the stuff. So I showed up early to the first practice, and I just put on the gear. The guy's like, "Oh, I guess you're my catcher." And the one thing I didn't do a lot of was catching the ball. And so during the summer, it would like they'd throw a pitch. I'd miss it.
Run in sprints.
I'd go back to the fence. I'd grab it. I'd throw it.
Yeah, I mean, for us, like, games were the break because they were mostly at night.
Yeah.
And it would, you know, it doesn't cool off entirely, but it's a lot cooler than the sun. Practices were tough, man.
Yeah.
They were tough. Especially when you're the last guy, like the basically the bullpen catcher, you're just catching everybody.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to make the starter do it. They got to rest him for the game.
Right. And wasn't your starter a pro?
Oh, yeah. No, he won 4 gold gloves in the National League. Yeah, Charles Johnson.
That's pretty good.
He was basically the best defensive catcher in the National League before Yadi.
Wow.
Yeah. And then Yadi came along a little bit later.
And could you tell the first time you saw him?
Oh, my God, yeah. He was huge. Like 6'3", 230, threw 90 miles an hour down to second base. If you put him on the mound, it was probably 95. Hit bombs, yeah. He was a first-round pick out of high school and turned it down to go to college. And then he was the first ever player drafted by the Marlins when they were an expansion team.
Very cool.
Yeah. Good dude, too, by the way. Nicest guy ever.
Yeah. Do you still stay in touch at all?
I haven't talked to him in a while, but he has his own barbecue sauce now. Like, he sells barbecue sauce. Like, it's legit. I got to order some.
You should get him on the show sometime.
All right. I'll text him.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to him. Headlines, Rach?
Yes, brought to you by Schnucks. Reward yourself daily with the Schnucks Rewards app. So, bringing the 2034 Winter Olympic Games to Salt Lake City is going to be quite an expensive affair. It'll set the city back a staggering $2.83 billion.
Do they expect to make that back, or is it just a feather in the cap?
So taxpayers won't be responsible for that money. It's coming from commercial and private sources. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming these are all companies who are going to get their money's worth out of it. But yeah, that is crazy. Would you guys ever, there have never been Olympics in St. Louis.
No.
Yeah, I guess not.
No,
hear that it like just completely decimates your city for a time.
First of all, we'll never get one, but well, I'm sure we don't worry about it.
That's why I was like,
you have to build all kinds of new stadiums. And
if you were in Chicago, would you go?
No. I mean, I guess I would. I mean, I went into Sydney. That was the one I got sent to for work. Part of it is because you got to go to Australia. It was awesome.
Good one.
But I really enjoyed the Olympic experience. Like, I enjoy everybody there was, I mean, people from all over the world, but everybody was just in a good mood. It's not like pro sports where everybody's kind of like want to fight the other team. Everybody was really in a great mood. The crowds were packed. Every event was cool. So, yeah, I'd probably go. I'd want to make it a day trip. I wouldn't want to have to stay anywhere. Like, if it's Chicago, I just go stay with family members and then take the train in and go to some events. Yeah.
So Amy just texted me and said that in 1904, we had the Olympics.
Oh, we did?
Thank you, Amy.
That would make sense.
I was wondering about that.
Interesting. Yeah, that's cool. I'm going to have to look that up and learn about it.
How did I not know that?
I think I'm dating Ranji's mom now. I gave her a 1904 World's Fair plate today. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh, nice.
Very cool.
All right, a pilot managed to land a plane safely after hail ripped apart its nose cone. So this happened on an Australian Airlines flight on Sunday night. It was going from Spain to Vienna, and the members of the cockpit crew say they didn't see the hailstorm on the radar before it hit. They were forced to send out a mayday call. But despite the damage to the cockpit, the pilot was able to land the plane safely.
Yeah, it smashed the window of the cockpit. It didn't go through, but it was really beat up.
We should give a shout out to our friend Annie Fry, who I understand was a stud in the Blue Angels.
I know. I hear there's video of this. I would like to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, evidently. So everyone, anytime you do a fly along with a fighter jet, they're going to take you up and, show you a good time. But evidently when you hit 5 G's is where a lot of people pass out, and she hit 7 and didn't.
Pretty cool.
And she had to work out for like 3 months before just to do it, like weight training and such. Oh, there you go. Showing a picture of it right now.
Yeah, this is the video. I'll try to zoom it to the end where they're doing the 7 G's.
Well done to Annie.
Yeah, really cool.
They want you to throw up, too. That's
the, they want you to, Dave?
Oh, the pilots do. Yeah, they think it's funny.
Do they give you like a puke bag?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. You got something.
No idea, but I mean, God, I'm jealous.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It seems like the ultimate like thrill ride, just being a jet, fighter jet.
Gas prices have taken a downward turn, which is good news. As you know, with less than a month ago, before millions of us embark on our 4th of July road trips and other summer vacations, the average price of gasoline has dropped more than it has all year, and it is expected to remain low through the upcoming holiday, July 4th. So.
Speaking of dropping, have you guys seen the statistics on crime? Like, nationally, the FBI statistics, the murder rate is down 26%. Rape rate, which is sick that we even have one, also down 26%. Robberies down something like 17-18%. Everywhere but St. Louis, we are holding steady. We're exactly where we were last year.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised that robberies are down, just based on, like, anecdotally, you always see people smash and grab.
Right, yeah.
I wonder if it's a question of reporting.
Yeah, how, true.
Are crimes being reported?
Yeah,
like that, like a smash and grab. Are they being
is it that we feel that way because more cameras are everywhere, right? Like, you got more cameras outside of places and dash cams and things like that, that you see it, and it feels like it's more, as opposed to what the numbers say.
Dave, I know the whole "if it bleeds, it leads," but when you were doing the local news, do you feel like it was as much shooting in North St. Louis, 3 dead, blah blah, or is it more so now?
No, I think that's always been strong. A fire is also right up there. Mm. Weather really took over the lead when it could be.
Yeah.
But a shooting, it was always the fire of a vacant building. It's like, why are we doing this? Other than, ooh, it's a fire.
B-roll.
Yeah, exactly.
Final story here. Bucky's brought a world record home to Texas. So the Luling store officially is recognized as the world's largest convenience store with over 75,000 square feet of storage space, 120 gas pumps, and thousands of snacks, meals, and drink options. I would like to go.
120 pumps?
What is ours? Our Bucky's.
We have
light.
A Wally's.
Wally's.
Yeah. In Fenton, I believe.
Yep.
Andrew and I took a little afternoon trip there one day.
Jaunt.
It was extremely fun. I would love to go to a Bucky's if the opportunity ever
TikTok
presented itself.
I've been to Bucky's.
Of like a Phillips 66 across the street from a Bucky's, and there was no one there.
That's got to be the worst.
Nobody.
Aww, that's sad. That's really
Well,
sad.
Bucky's are pretty cool. They're a lot like Wally's.
Yeah.
And there's quite a few similarities.
Do they have a beef jerky wall?
I think.
They better.
I think.
Do you see the Bucky's son?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where they lose out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was terrible.
He was
taking pictures he shouldn't have been taking.
He was installing cameras in bathrooms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
I guess I'll stick to Wally's.
Yeah, let's go to Wally's.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
All righty.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we have the Think Tank, where we get a couple of people in on different sides of the aisle, and we discuss all things politics. We have Steve Ellman coming in and our buddy Jeff Smith. Some fun facts?
Yes.
Here's one. This is not really a fun fact, but Andrew, you'll talk sometimes about medical bills and hanging over your head and things like that. Have you seen what's happening with the credit reports?
No.
Joe Biden is, I don't know whether it's executive order or they're just trying to push through legislation, but they're trying to get it that starting in 2025, medical bills would not count against your credit score.
Wow.
So that would make a big difference for people.
It would. It would make a giant difference. Is this like retroactive, going back, like 15 years?
Yeah, I mean, like...
Fixing the reports themselves, right?
Yes.
Like, they would all have to adjust with this new information.
Ooh, yes.
Wow.
So what it would be is you would still have your medical debt, but it wouldn't show up on your credit report.
So do creditors like this or hate this, I wonder?
I imagine they hate it.
I mean, I don't know.
Is it better for them if... People have bad credit scores or good credit scores?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, probably good, because that way they can lend you money.
They can lend you more if you have a better credit,
but
right?
But does that lead to any issues? I'm speaking off the top of my head, but because in my reaction to this is it's a good thing. You should not be hampered from living a life because you have medical bills or because you can't control that. And it's not about bad decisions. It's about bad luck in many cases. But does that have any impact on things like home loans? And do you have some more foreclosures, or do you have, because that's extra
like
debt that wouldn't be, right, right. Yeah. I'd be curious to know. I'm not suggesting that that'd be the case.
Does everyone rush to like refinance their loans and stuff as soon as this happens?
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Wow. That'll be very interesting to watch.
I have other kinds of debt, but I don't have the medical debt, so I'm not sure how big of an impact it has. But
yeah.
Starting in what year?
2025.
2025. Wow, that's next year.
Yeah.